I'm Chuck Smeaton from the Royal Institution of Australia, and this is the Cosmos Briefing Podcast. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land wherever you are listening from today, and I would like to pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Remote and wild, Antarctica is a spectacular place that most people on Earth won't ever get to. But it's a frontier for scientific research, and something we are very passionate about as the Royal Institution of Australia is the Australian Antarctic Division's education partner. Today, Cosmos journalist Lauren Fuge speaks to Professor Nicole Webster, who took up the role as the Chief Scientist of the Australian Antarctic Division this year. Webster completed her PhD at James Cook University in Queensland, investigating the microbial ecology of a Great Barrier Reef sponge, before transitioning into Antarctic science, including studying microbial communities as indicators for human-induced stress in the Antarctic marine environment. In this discussion, we learn about what kind of research is undertaken on this frozen continent, from the smallest krill to the largest ice sheets, and what it might teach us about our future on this planet.
So, Nicole, you're the Chief Scientist of the Australian Antarctic Division. What does that mean? What do you get to do every day?
Well, my day job's fairly variable, and it's changed a lot probably in the 6 months that I've been in the role. I think I've had a very steep learning curve coming into this role as Chief Scientist of the Antarctic Division, because most of my experience is as inactive research in tropical marine science. So the last 6 months have been spent coming up to speed with the broad remit of different science projects that we do down in Antarctica. And really, so trying to understand what science is being done, but probably more importantly is working with our science leadership team to try and prioritise what science we really need to be doing over the next 5 to 10 years to answer some of the really big picture questions that are facing us in Antarctic science. So lots of planning, lots of working with external partners as well. There's a large number of players in Antarctic science in Australia. We're here at the Antarctic Division. We also have our CSIRO actively engaged, the Bureau of Meteorology, the Geosciences Australia, and the university sector also contributes a lot to Antarctic research. So it's working with all of those players to understand how Antarctic science can be more than the sum of its parts. And it's also about working with our international colleagues to see where are the best place for international collaboration in Antarctic science is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. So I'm interested in coming back to Antarctic science after and learning about what you guys are doing in that space. But first of all, I wonder just about your journey. Like, how did you end up where you are today? How did you get into science, and what was the trajectory of your career to where you are?
That's a great question, and I get asked it frequently, and I still haven't really fully understood myself the key decision points that have happened at various points in my career. At school, I was actually very heavily interested in literature, poetry, and law. So I considered a career path in journalism and the legal profession. And it wasn't really until year 12, I'd always been passionate about the ocean, but it wasn't really until the end of my schooling that I thought seriously about a career in marine science. And I applied for James Cook University, and that sort of took me up into the tropics, immersed me in a really vibrant community of coral reef researchers. And I never really looked back. And so I studied a PhD in marine microbiology. I was very interested in trying to understand how microscopic life actually contributes to the health of marine ecosystems. They underpin so many of the functions that enable us to have healthy marine ecosystems. And so the kind of questions that I was asking as a PhD researcher in the tropics were actually not that different to what was needed to understand the Antarctic marine ecosystem. So when I finished my PhD, I wrote a postdoc proposal to work with the New Zealand Antarctic Division. And I went down to Antarctica with the New Zealand Division and dived beneath the ice down in the Ross Sea, collecting all sorts of different marine samples to understand the role of microbes in keeping the Antarctic marine ecosystem healthy. And so the latitude almost didn't matter. It was more driven by the science questions of the role of microbes in marine systems. And then I just continued through my career path, probably picking up more experience in leadership and mentoring as I went along. And then I would suggest over the last 5 years, Well, I'm a really, really passionate researcher and I absolutely love the thrill of scientific discovery, I did get this growing sense of urgency that actually our world is facing some really significant challenges at the moment that science can play a really central role in developing solutions for. And where were my skills going to make the biggest difference in mentoring the next generation of scientists and really understanding how this microbe talks to this microbe in the marine ecosystem? Or was it about really throwing my hat in the ring and taking up a more significant leadership role to really start to shape science that's needed to be able to inform solutions for some of those big picture challenges?
Mm-hmm. And is that when you applied to the Antarctic Division?
I did. So I saw, I actually saw the advertisement and I went out the following day actually for a trip out to the reef to actually collect some samples for coral spawning. And just seeing some of the damage to the reef from climate change and other impacts just kind of reinforced that feeling that it was the right time in my career to actually take that step and really try to take a leadership role where I had a very significant position in being able to shape the science, but also where I could use some of my communication skills to try and document and communicate that science knowledge to the people who really needed to hear about it, the public and decision makers, so that they could make informed decisions based on science.
Hmm. So why Antarctica? What's so special about this place at the very edge of the world?
Antarctica is such a remarkable place. I think it's a really difficult thing to describe just why it's so remarkable. You know, it's remote and it's extreme and it's fairly inhospitable. But it's also a place that's just so breathtakingly beautiful and it really captures your imagination and stimulates all your senses. So there's really no other place like it on Earth. I think it's also a very unique environment to study science. There's science questions that can only be answered by researchers in Antarctica. So I think it will always have a very enduring place in the hearts of scientists.
Mm-hmm. What are some examples of some of those questions that only Antarctica can help us answer?
Yeah, there's so many, but one of the things, one of the big projects that we have going at the moment is called the Million Year Ice Core Project. And so here we've got a team of scientists that are actually trying to drill a core of ice that will take us 1 million years into the past. So what happens when you're looking at the ice sheet is that snow falls over time and it accumulates and gradually gets compressed into ice at depth. And as it gets compressed into ice, it traps these tiny bubbles of atmosphere into the actual ice. So by drilling a core that can travel sort of 2.8 kilometres down into the ice sheet, we can actually reconstruct climate 1 million years into the past. We can't do that sort of science anywhere else. And we really need to understand how climate has changed in the past, because that's the sort of information that we need to predict how it's going to shape in the future.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like a time capsule, isn't it, looking back?
It's exactly what it's like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, so really, really exciting science.
In what other ways can studying Antarctica help us look at our own impacts on the planet?
Yeah, I think Antarctica does that in a number of ways. And the most important is that most people will know that the polar regions are probably the fastest changing environments on Earth. So Antarctica essentially acts like a canary in the coal mine. So it's really important that we start to look at the things like the effects of global warming in Antarctica, because one of the primary effects of global warming in Antarctica is that we are going to see loss of ice sheets. We've got very vulnerable ice sheets in East Antarctica. And as we start to lose those, they're going to play a really major role in things like sea level rise. And that's really important for us here in Australia. We need to be able to understand so that we can manage risk and mitigate for the impacts of coastal erosion and sea level rise. So studying things like that in Antarctica actually helps us manage affairs back here in Australia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When a lot of people think about science in Antarctica, I think they think of, you know, climate change and they think of ice and think of penguins. But what other interesting and exciting science is going on down there?
There's so much exciting science that extends beyond that charismatic megafauna that most people think of when they think about Antarctica. And I think one of the areas that's often overlooked actually is our research in atmospheric science. So, you know, Antarctica has a, there is a large amount of research happening there that focuses on the atmosphere because we need those observations to be able to inform our global climate models. So, for instance, one of the largest sources of uncertainty in understanding our future climate actually is the clouds that are present in the Southern Ocean. And so actually resolving things like the radiation or cloud bias in our current climate models is going to give us much more accurate predictions for future climate. And it can even inform things like weather patterns here in Southeast Australia, like rainfall. So we do a lot of atmospheric research down in Antarctica that doesn't get the same sort of visibility as our seals and penguins work. We also work on some of the biological systems like krill. Krill are the tiny crustaceans. They're the most abundant crustaceans on Earth. And they're actually the basis of the food web. So they provide food for things like seals and penguins and fish and squid and seabirds. And so really understanding how krill, how many krill are there, their distribution and abundance patterns seasonally and spatially, how krill can be sustainably fished, and then how these tiny crustaceans might actually be impacted by things like ocean warming and acidification is another topic of our current research. We also have researchers even working on the moss beds. Most people don't associate Antarctica with vegetation, but there's an area actually just outside of Casey Station, which has actually been described as the Daintree of Antarctica because it has these moss beds and they're like miniature old growth forests. A single moss stem can be over 100 years old. And so trying to understand how these really precious, unique ecosystems like moss beds are impacted by climate change is another area of research. But we hear less about some of these topics than we do with the more typical ice and penguin seal research.
Do you think some of the science that we're able to do in Antarctica will change over the next few years as the climate changes?
I think there will be a couple of things that really drive the future of Antarctic science. One is the focus on the impact of environmental change. So that's obviously become a much more central part of our focus. So there's a couple of things that it's really going to change the focus of our science program going forward. And one of the main things is developments in technology. So we'll be moving towards actually having more autonomous technology that can take observations of the atmosphere, the wildlife, the biogeochemical environment in real time and provide researchers with unprecedented levels of data that they haven't had access to before. I think one of the major challenges actually going forward in Antarctic science is how do we grow this field of Antarctic science? Because there's so much to be done, but we're really restricted by the limited number of people that we can get down to the ice to support their research. And so by having expanding our use of autonomous technology to be able to provide long-term data streams that researchers can work on back here in Australia to answer some of the big picture questions without actually all needing to be based down on the ice will really revolutionise our science. I think one of the big things that's happened, most people would be aware of in the last couple of weeks, is that Australia has just taken ownership of its new icebreaker. This is a $500 million investment by the federal government. And this icebreaker has unprecedented levels of scientific capability and is going to be able to enable us to answer questions that we've never been able to answer before. We'll be able to get observations under things like sea ice, which has never before been possible. So there's lots of change that will happen for the future of Antarctic science. And I think environmental change is driving the need for that. But developments in technology and innovation are really going to be able to facilitate it.
Mm-hmm. I have so many questions from that. Like the autonomous observations sound so interesting and they remind me of like, I guess, sending a rover to Mars or something.
Yeah, I know the RSV Noina, I was actually just inducted on her this morning and she is just such a remarkable vessel. One of the things she has is two drop keels, which essentially we can load up with scientific equipment And then that can get pushed down under the ice so that we can have things like sonar systems listening in for marine mammal calls. We can have cameras and observations and be able to retrieve all of this biological and physicochemical data right under the ship, which we haven't been able to do before. So it's such an exciting future, really, for Antarctic science.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's super cool. What do you think are the other major challenges for Antarctic science going forward?
So I think the biggest challenges for Antarctic science are logistics and access to the continent. And I talked about that a little bit already, just this ability to move towards employing technology and innovation to be able to get us data streams without the requirement to have people on the ice. There's other ways that we can address that. So the RSV Noina actually has a room called the Wet Well, which actually brings seawater into the research vessel at 5,000 litres per minute. And it's all submerged in this contained space. And that actually enables us to get live animals that we previously haven't been able to in pristine condition. So whether that's jellyfish or the krill that I was talking about that are the basis of the Southern Ocean ecosystem, we will now be able to collect those in pristine condition and bring them back to Hobart, where we can work on them in aquaria to run experiments to start to understand things like how are these Southern Ocean organisms actually going to respond to ocean warming and acidification? What does it mean for their reproduction? What does it mean for their ability to build shells and to be able to feed effectively? So we'll be able to answer a lot of questions from right here in Hobart as well. So I think while there are significant challenges for the future of Antarctic science, there's a lot of opportunity there as well if we think creatively and use innovation to help us.
Mm-hmm. And what are you personally most excited to see come in the next few years?
I think so we've got another couple of years to actually commission our RSV Noina, and that means actually testing and putting all of the scientific equipment through its paces. And then in the year 2022-23, we'll do our first major science voyage. And this is a really multidisciplinary voyage that's been planned for the marginal ice zone. We actually have very few data points from the marginal ice zone, and we want to mount this multidisciplinary voyage that will enable us to look at the atmosphere and the biological productivity of the ocean and the thickness and dynamics of the sea ice and actually be able to pull all of this information together to give us a really unprecedented understanding of this particular part of Antarctica that we haven't been able to study very effectively before. So that's only a couple of years away, and it's incredibly exciting.
Mm-hmm. In your position as chief scientist, do you ever get to go to Antarctica?
Oh, that is the million-dollar question. I absolutely will get to go to Antarctica, and I really need to be able to do that. I need to be able to visit each of the stations and see the science as it's happening in situ to really be able to understand where the opportunities and challenges for our scientists lie. This year I was really hoping to get down on one of the maiden voyages of Noina, where we are going through the commissioning of some of that scientific equipment. But we've got some additional challenges with COVID needing to quarantine expeditioners before they go south. So hopefully I'll be able to at least get on an airplane and get down to Casey Station for a short period of time. And then as the years go by, I'll hope to be able to cycle through all of the stations and really get exposed to the broad range of science that's happening in the field.
Mm-hmm. And does this position have a certain tenure, a certain amount of years that you'll be in it?
I don't plan to go anywhere for the immediate future, Lauren. I actually was already what they call an indefinite employee in government when I took on this role, so they transferred that across. So I can really have the luxury, I think, of thinking long-term and trying to make decisions that are actually going to position us where we need to be in 10 years' time or 15, 20 years' time, rather than needing to be concerned about making an impact or changing the direction in the immediate term.
Mm-hmm. What are you hoping to achieve over the long term then?
I would really love to be able to shape the Antarctic program into a really innovative, integrated and collaborative program where all of the different parts of the Antarctic research sector are working together, not just in delivering the science that's being designed by individual groups, but we were actually coming together to co-design the science that's needed to be able to answer those really big picture questions, like how fast is Antarctica responding to climate change? What do changes in the ice sheet mean for sea level rise? What do they mean for us here in Australia? Answers to those really global issues, I think, needs really audacious and very integrated science. And we can only achieve that if we actually come together to work at it. So that's my vision for the future of Antarctic science.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, like you were saying, that a lot of these questions are global issues. So what opportunities does Antarctica present for you to collaborate internationally with scientists and governments around the world?
It's one of the wonderful things, Lauren, about Antarctic science. It's probably the most collaborative of all scientific fields. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that it's logistically very difficult to get access. And so there's a technical benefit in having these quid pro quo arrangements where we actually support each other to be able to access and have shared infrastructure and things. But I think that the philosophy of collaboration goes much deeper than that. It really is part of the soul of Antarctic researchers. They really do work together in a way. And I think it's part of working in a hostile, extreme, very isolated environment. People know that they can't achieve science in isolation in those kind of environments. You really do need to be able to work together very collaboratively. I think we have something like 70 permanent research stations in Antarctica now, representing 29 different countries. And these countries are a really wonderful example of, you know, coming together and sharing collaboratively around science. There's also the broader international piece where we actually have connection to global forums like the Scientific Committee for Antarctic Research, the Committee for Environmental Protection, and CAMLA, where we're all working together to ensure things like sustainable fisheries and answering some of those big picture questions that I was talking about. So Antarctica is an incredibly collaborative place for science.
Mm-hmm. But obviously in your role in the Australian Antarctic Division, you want to be bringing the science back to Australia. Why do you think it's so important to communicate Antarctic science to Australians?
There's a couple of reasons it's really important to communicate Antarctic science. One is that the answers to those big picture questions that we just talked about are really important to be able to inform decision making. Both the public and our decision makers need to be able to make evidence-based decisions. And so it is the role of scientists not only to look for solutions to those challenging problems, they really do need to use their communication skills so that they can share that experience with the people who need it to make those decisions. I think it's also really important that we share our passion and just the incredible environment that is Antarctica to capture the public's imagination, because very frequently out of sight is out of mind, and we can't afford for Antarctica to be out of mind because it's such a special, unique ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And speaking about that passion, you're only the second woman to be chief scientist of the Australian Antarctic Division. What are your hopes for female scientists coming up through the ranks now?
I think it's a very, very good time in Antarctic science to be a woman in science. I'm really hoping that we can have a very, very strong mentoring network for women coming through Antarctic science. I also hope that my rather unconventional career can set, I guess, a positive example for the fact that you don't necessarily need to have a linear career in science. And I would love for us to be able to establish a culture of and an ethos of sponsorship and support for women, looking for opportunities to put women forward in Antarctic science. And I've definitely seen examples of that culture really starting to strengthen, even in the 6 months that I've been at the Antarctic Division.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I guess just one final question. What is there left to learn about Antarctica, and what are you really excited to learn about?
There is so much left to learn about Antarctica because it is so remote. Our understanding of Antarctic science is very incremental. We have a limited pool of people that can work on Antarctic science. I'm most excited about integration of science. We have capability coming online now, like our overland traverse capability and this development that we have to be able to have a vessel like Nuyina. undertaking Southern Ocean and Antarctic science. And so that integration of the biological, the physical, the chemical, the atmospheric data to give us a really holistic understanding of how this ecosystem works rather than just having isolated, fragmented, very sort of narrowly focused individual research projects. We can now come together as a community to integrate our understanding to better understand how it works as an ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Thank you so much, Nicole, for having a chat to me. It's been absolutely fascinating.
It's been wonderful. Thanks, Lauren.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode. Remember that you can head to cosmosmagazine.com via the link in the description for more great content. You can also subscribe to Cosmos Magazine, Australia's only science print magazine, and Cosmos Weekly, with its unique approach to how science, the news, and the economy intersect. Podcast listeners can get both products at a special price using the coupon code you will also find in the description. And of course, you can watch and listen to all our Cosmos briefings via the link in the description too. And remember, if you support science and its communication, please support our work at the Royal Institution of Australia. I'm Chuck Smeaton. Today's interview was hosted by Lauren Fuge, and our executive producer is Catherine Roberts. Thank you.